I almost feel that there's many people today in the workplace and that is going through a lot of anxiety right now because they're dealing with a level of unknowns that they may not be prepared for. How people can navigate the unknowns.
I'm sympathetic to that because I do think that things, events, jobs, industries are changing in 1 year what it would have taken a decade before. So that's real. There is a lot of change around you. So what do? Take control of it. Understand the change. We control way, 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 way more than you think you control. You control it almost all of it. Yes, like life throws these weird haymakers at you and you got to duck it or you got to take it on the chin and you got to get back up. But you control a ton of you. And if you do that proactively, then when the chaos comes, you're ready. You're ready to deal with it. You're at least much more ready than not.
You are listening to Personalization Outbreak, a podcast about the collapse of traditional corporate standards in today's more personalized world. I'm Glenn Yopis. I'm a leadership strategist, author, contributor to Forbes, and founder of the Leadership in the Age of Personalization movement. On this show, I'm interviewing executives across multiple sectors to find out how the balance between standardization and personalization can exist. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Personalization Outbreak Podcast. Have you asked yourself these questions? Am I really suited to take a predetermined career path to find success? Are there other alternative routes that align with my talents, passions, and life circumstances? Now, to help us address these questions and many others is our guest today, Jim Vandehei. Jim is the co-founder and CEO of Axios, a news website covering politics, health, technology, business, and much more. In fact, Axios's value proposition reflects what Jim stands for, giving people smart, efficient news worthy of one's time, attention, and trust. So before we get started, please click the like button below, share it with your colleagues, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and social media at Glenn Yopis. Jim, really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thrilled to be here. It'll be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, what's really fun to know is that on April 30th, your new book, Just the Good Stuff, will be released. Now, the book offers a no BS guide to navigating the realities of a changing workplace, showing us that no matter the challenges that we face, a fulfilling life is within our reach. Jim, why'd you write this book now? And why does this book matter?
Yeah, a little bit about me to explain the book is my background is that I was a journalist. I covered the presidency for the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. I started a company called Politico and then started Axios. So I wasn't born a CEO or an entrepreneur, and I wasn't born a manager or a leader. I became sort of self-taught. And what was interesting is because I was a journalist, I took notes and I watched myself as I screwed everything up and then recalibrated and tried to, you know, basically ultimately figured out how to do this job and deal with all the complexities of a modern workforce. I started writing a column about this, and the response to it was overwhelming. And I said, hey, I should probably put this into a book. Because I have this unique perspective, I think it's helpful. I come from a small town. I'm a normal person. There's nothing that spectacular about my background, but I was able to do these cool things. And I took these notes and I want to pass them along to other people.
You know, it's interesting. When I wrote my first book, it was 90 shoeboxes full of restaurant napkins as I was asking my father, who was 50 when I was born, about life as I was traveling and kind of figuring it out as I went in my early corporate life. So I think what the point there is taking notes. It's amazing how many people just don't take notes. Why is that? I mean, is this contributing to why people don't want to take a whole lot of time to read?
I don't get it. I have the notes function on my phone. And if you went into it, you would think I'm a psychopath. It is tens of thousands of notes on ideas I have. A lot of it's memories. I mark it diary. If anything ever happens to me to search diary, you'll find out all the different interesting things that I thought or was interested in about family. And it's my way. And I don't think everyone learns this way, but I learn by synthesizing my thinking, putting it to paper, putting it to iPhone, And then it tends to lock it into my mind. And so it's a, to me, it's both like therapeutic. It's this awesome reservoir of information I can go to later, but it really is a great way to just to sharpen how I think and feel about life.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because and I can't wait to read the book, and I've already pre-ordered it on Amazon, just so you know. Of course.
God bless you.
No, of course. I can't wait, because, you know, this whole thing around no BS, I mean, this is the way these younger generations are thinking now. In fact, they've often told me, and so I completely resonated with your other book that you co-wrote around smart brevity, that we've got to stop using these Shakespearean words that don't mean anything. What happened to the English language, and why has the ability to read or process information become so difficult just beyond all the noise?
Yeah, I don't know that people were ever terrific communicators, particularly in writing. It's just a tough skill. But I do think that there's just like a performative side to people where they think when they're talking that they're being judged based on the $11 words that they can bust out or the acronyms that make them seem like they're sophisticated. And most people just want you to talk to them like you're in a bar. Be normal. Be enthusiastic. Be blunt. Be yourself. Like, they don't want, like, if you use words like verisimilitude, they want to punch you in the throat. They don't want to think you're brilliant, buddy.
Well, it's interesting you say judgment, because I'm curious now for our listeners and viewers. Jim was told by his high school counselor that he wasn't cut for college. Now, Jim, we know what the rest of the story is since you were told that. What advice would you give either that high school counselor or others or any leader that may be too quick to place judgment on people's potential?
In her defense, if you had looked at my body of work at that point, she wasn't wrong. She's looking, I graduated in the bottom one third of my high school class, barely. And I had extracurricular activities that kept me interested as opposed to school. The advice would be, like, whether you're 16, 20, 24, like, people change, people evolve. All of us sort of hit adult puberty at a different age in terms of when we start to find ourselves, find our groove, and never underestimate what happens when a person finds a passion. When you find a job, I always say, like, what would you do for free? Like, I would do my job for free. I don't want to do it for free, but I would do it for free because I love running a media company. I love the curiosity aspect of it. I love news. I love starting companies. I love talking about these things. And so once I found that match, then I was on fire. But before that, there was no reason to think that that would have happened. And so I think all of us, whether you're 20, 40, 60, 80, like, we're capable of change. We have to seek out things that really electrify us, that aren't just duty or chore. And there's parts of life where you just have to do duty and chore, but I don't think as much as everyone thinks there is. And then, like, things can change. People can change. And you get the best out of yourself and the best out of others when you match those two.
So how did you discover your passion for politics and journalism?
I had basically gone through three or four majors. I was an accounting major because my father was an accountant. I sucked at that. I tried business. I tried computers. I was thinking to myself, I'm pretty good at writing. And I had this weird tick. This is a true story. I would go out and I would get smashed in college, and I would come home and I would watch, like, House committee hearings on the agriculture bill. Like, I was just fascinated by Congress. I was like, well, I, for whatever reason, am fascinated in this and I'm a good writer. Hey, I should be a journalist. And that led me to go take some classes. I was just dumb enough or courageous enough or whatever to go to the local paper. I'd never been a reporter. I said, I know sports. I know a lot about sports. I follow it. I played it. Like, can I be a sports reporter? And the guy looked at me like I was an alien, but he's like, I don't know. Let me give you a test. And I did pretty well. And he's like, okay, I'll hire you. And I was like, oh, by the way, I've never taken a journalism course.
Go ahead. So how do you disrupt comfort? How do you, because you had to do some of that to get to where you are today.
I think back then it was almost, I was just naive enough, right? I had a good balance of being naive and having just enough self-confidence to go take some risks. I think in terms of, like, am I purposely putting myself in a place of discomfort? I'm 53. That's really only happened in the last 10 years. Where now, like, I'm obsessed with it. I'm constantly putting myself in places that I didn't think I could do just to prove whether it's health or diet or, you know, just work stuff or relationship stuff. Now I just do that because I kind of have a screw loose for it. But I never thought that way back then. I don't think when we're that young, most of us aren't like plotting out life and making decisions that methodically. We're just like trying to meet somebody and have fun.
Well, what would you tell someone today that's stuck in their career? That, as I call it, they're in career quicksand, like they just can't get out of this rut. How do you help them embrace discomfort?
With the caveat that, listen, there are some people who are in positions where they have children or they have elderly parents and they literally need their paycheck to help the lives of others. Yep. I don't think that's most of us. I think most people are in a position where, yes, maybe that's a reality, but they could make a move. They're just too scared. And the thing is, I just think this is like the biggest no duh topic. You spend anywhere from 60 to 90% of your waking hours going to work, thinking about work, bitching about work. So why would you not do everything in your power to make that a really, really positive experience for yourself? So if you have a bad boss, a bad job, you're in a rut, get out. Like, change is so rejuvenating. It's so possible for most people, not all people, but way, way, way too many people put handcuffs on themselves and say, woe is me, I can't do anything about it. Man, we control so much more of our lives than we think. Everyone, oh man, but my parents this, or I live there, or my knee hurts. Like, I'm telling you, you can fix your knee. Like, maybe eat better and work out, or you where you live. I bet you that there's a lot of companies that will hire you no matter where you live now. So these excuses that we use to become complacent, they're usually BS. We're just deceiving ourselves.
Totally agree. I mean, I believe when you were talking, I was thinking opportunities are everywhere, yet few have eyes to see them. This, I believe, we're living in one of the most opportunistic times in modern history, Jim. I mean, people just need to take that first step because it's in our ability to create the opportunities that people don't even know exist. Thoughts?
I would take it further. I'd say you live in the most opportunistic moment in history. And by the way, it's not even close. Think about it. Because of technology, you have connectivity anywhere. You can actually work globally. Most companies are hiring at least a decent percentage of their workforce remotely. So location is no longer the hindrance. Oh, by the way, people my age and older didn't have enough babies. So we have a population issue, which means there's more jobs available than ever before. So the idea that you are hamstrung and you can't do anything is nonsense. You have more opportunity now than at any point in humanity. And the question is, like, do you pounce on that?
Exactly. And see, this is part of what's changing. And I love your point of view on your thoughts on this changing workplace environment. Corporations don't realize that their employees are now consumers. And we've never thought about the employee as a consumer. They've always been viewed as a cost center, that we almost own them and control them. I think the balance of power is now shifting. I mean, wouldn't you think that it's much more about less about the business defining the individual and much more about the individual defining the business?
Well, it's not just that they're a customer, they're an advertiser. They're now on social media, they're out in public talking, if they love your company, about what they love about your company. Or if they hate your company, they're telling everyone they hate it. And so you have to, the employee today is so different than me. I think about this all the time. So we have two companies now, but I've basically started three. And I would say of the three, we're talking thousands of jobs and 65% of the employees under the age of 35. So much younger than myself. So I have a pretty good sampling. And what's different is the individual today. One, they're motivated by things you and I weren't motivated from. Like, when I got into the workforce, I wanted two things. I want a paycheck and I don't want you to hit me. I didn't look at you for purpose or meaning or inclusion. Like, I don't even remember those words ever being used. You're like an alien, had someone said that when we were kids. But they are. And so like they're motivated by this idea of, listen, like I want to do good with my work. Well, that's awesome. If you, so as an employer, as a manager, figure out the good that you're doing and play to that. Because what you'll find is you can get just as much, if not more, productivity out of young people. They just respond to a different incentive. So you have to adjust the incentive system. And yes, they're going to be more opinionated. They're more individualistic. They might pressure you to take political positions you don't want to. But guess what? You don't have to do every single thing that every person wants to do, but you have to figure out, like, who are we? What do we stand for? And what will we take a stand for? And once you do that, then everything else becomes pretty clear.
Would you agree, Jim, that what you just described is coming at a pace that perhaps organizations are just not prepared for? Because this is not a trend. This is not a fad. I've heard so many people say, no, no, this is a generational thing. And, you know, we always, and we'll talk about AI a bit later, but yeah, much like people talk about being AI enabled, you know what? This is a generational enabled society and workplace that we live in today. I mean, in other words, don't you think people from our generation care too, have purpose, have meaning? But many of our people from our generations, they got so stuck in what I call the standardization model. It's hard for them to get out of it, because not just because that's what they've been rewarded to do, but because they've lost their identity in the process. I mean, we're talking about a different group of people that's going to unleash things and force organizations to take a difficult stand on. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I run into people all the time like you do that are, this is a fad, this will go away. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, it's not a fad. It's like remote work. It's just a COVID thing. Like, I'm sorry, there are not that many employees. When the employees have this much power, a lot of them already moved to Tulsa and to Austin and to San Diego. They're not moving out. So if you want talent, you're going to have a remote workforce. Therefore, you will always have a remote workforce. You're not going to get young people to suddenly be motivated more by money than purpose. And so what I always tell people is, like, I'm too efficient and ruthless with my time to give a crap about something I can't change. I just have to figure out, how do I make the best of it? How do I unleash what is real enthusiasm in this purpose to be able to drive as much productivity as I possibly can? And so any manager who's still like saying this isn't real or this will change, could not be more delusional.
Agreed. And this is why it's interesting you use that word, delusional. And I think this is why so many organizations have this illusion of progress at the expense of real evolution, because they think they're making strides in this, but it's too slow and the world around them is changing so fast. So I'm glad that you've addressed that head on. So Jim, let's shift gears. Yep. Rather than questions for a bit, I'm going to just throw out a few statements and I'd love for you to give me your perspective on them. Here we go.
Yep.
Without strategy, change is merely substitution, not evolution.
For sure, strategy is the whole game, and not just strategy, but clarity of strategy. And you have to be able to know, like, here are the two or three things that we're going to try to do in the next quarter, because the world changes so fast, you shouldn't think in years anymore. You should think in months or quarters at most. And if you don't have a strategy around it, you're just going to, it's your quicksand. You're just going to sit in quicksand. You're going to sink slowly, but you're never really going to get out.
Number two, there are many threats in business and in life, but it's not the threats themselves that make us vulnerable. It's our inability to respond in real time.
For sure. For sure. Like, the one thing you learn the older you get is, like, life's tough and, like, bad things happen. There's bad people around you. There's circumstances you don't control. What you do control is, how do you respond to it? What have you done to equip yourself for the bad stuff, the hard stuff, the tough stuff of life? And if you've done those things, you can take almost any circumstance and you can navigate it, no matter how painful it is. And you can usually do it with class and grace.
Three, knowing what's right isn't enough to start doing what's right. And knowing something's wrong isn't enough to stop doing it.
I think you've got to, but you've it's not knowing, like, because knowing almost suggests like an academic understanding of it. You have to have a set of values. Just talking to my son about this last night, you have to make a decision. Like, what are the three or four red lines in your life, the values that you will not compromise on, regardless of the pressure around you, regardless of how other people behave? If you have that built into you, your reactions are going to be, one, they're going to be the right reaction, but they're going to be natural. They're going to be instincts. It could be like a reflex of ducking when a ball gets thrown at you because it's built into your fiber.
And finally, the wise person forfeits their fortune when they do not trust themselves.
Listen, a little bit of self-doubt is okay. I think it keeps us humble, but you have to have like clarity about yourself. And that doesn't mean arrogance. Like, if you sat me down, I could tell you five things I'm probably better than almost anybody I know in my business at. I could also tell you the five things that I suck at. And I don't beat myself up over the things that I suck at. I either try to surround myself with people who are better at it than I, or I try to work at being better at those things and really try to allocate most of my time to doing the things that I'm good at.
Love it. So let's close with a few more questions, Jim. I read in a recent New York Times article about your views on the future of AI. You said the premium for people who can tell you things you do not know will only grow in importance, and no machine will do that. Can you
Listen,
elaborate?
I believe artificial intelligence will look back. It will be as big, if not bigger, than the creation of the phone and kind of the internet and connectivity. And I think for all of us, there's gonna be this anxiety. Does it replace me? Does it displace me? I don't think that's the case for most of us. I think of it more as having this really smart partner that can take the totality of human knowledge, the totality of your own experience, and make you a lot more effective at what you do. And that what will have value are the things that no robot or machine can ever do, which is capture nuance, have the creativity of collaboration, be able to make a values-based judgment, be able to appraise other people, be able to appraise complex situations that include human dynamics. And so, listen, there's a lot of downside risk and a lot of things that scare me about AI, but I think for the next couple of years, the only smart move for anyone, because it's not going away, is to familiarize yourself with it. Go download Perplexity or ChatGPT. There's free versions online. Start to play with these large language models. Read about it. You can't put your head in the sand on this. Just read about it. Understand how they work. Understand how the Elon Musks or the Sam Altmans think that it's going to make robots and machines that are so much smarter than us that humans become, less powerful compared to the machines. And like, maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't happen, but you at least have to have clarity of understanding about these things. Like, the world is such an exciting place right now. It could be scary. There's a lot of anxiety, but man, the next couple of years or the next decade, I wouldn't be surprised if we cure cancer. I wouldn't be surprised if we figure out how to personalize tutoring to every child based on their learning rhythms and their knowledge base. I wouldn't be surprised if we're able to vastly improve the productivity of all of us in the workplace. I wouldn't be surprised if the United States continues to crush the competition in terms of growth, because a lot of the technological expertise is starting here. So it's an interesting, exciting time to be alive. Yes, there's a lot of anxiety that comes with it, but anxiety, if you can control it, is again a kind of a wasted emotion.
So, given all the experiences you've had with your startups, Jim, and I almost feel that there's many people today in the workplace and that is going through a lot of anxiety right now because they're dealing with a level of unknowns that they may not be prepared for. How do you help someone provide some insight on how people can navigate the unknowns?
I'm sympathetic to that because I do think that things, events, jobs, industries are changing in 1 year what it would have taken a decade before. And I think we're probably headed to an era where it changes in a month what it would have taken a decade ago. So that's real. There is a lot of change around you. So what do? Take control of it. Understand the change. Read Axios. Read a couple of sources so you understand at least a base level what's happening with AI, what is happening in politics, what's happening with culture, what's happening in your very specific industry. Like, knowledge is a very powerful weapon. Like just being aware of these things so that you can make adjustments and you can be aware if your job's going to be threatened or there's going to be a new opportunity, just knowing it. And I'm not saying spend 3-4 hours a day reading. I think if you just use Axios, for example, you could probably spend 15 minutes a day and you could be smarter than most people who will spend days reading newspapers just because it's all about efficiency that it tackles these topics. But it's empowering. And then I would say, don't just think about the knowledge aspect. Think about the things you control. Like I got up today. I decided I was going to lift weights and run, and I was going to eat a healthy breakfast, and I was going to meet with people that I enjoy, and that I was going to be kind to somebody, and I was going to be forgiving to somebody. Like all day, we control way, 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 way more than you think you control. You control it almost all of it. Yes, like life throws these weird haymakers at you, and you got to duck it, or you got to take it on the chin and you got to get back up. But you control a ton of you. And if you do that proactively, then when the chaos comes, you're ready. You're ready. You're ready to deal with it. You're at least much more ready than not. And so the alternative is just to sit there and be complacent and be bitter and be scared. And like, we only get one crack at it as far as I can tell. I don't want to do that. I don't want to live in that posture.
Jim, you're so optimistic, but you know what you really are? You're realistic, because everything you just said there, anybody can do that. And one of the things that I continue to see, whether you're a frontline employee or even in the C-suite, we don't educate ourselves enough. We don't take the time to learn. We've almost become accustomed to the institution teaching us things. And those days are gone. Like you said, change is so fast. It's on us to get out in front, on us to learn and go to platforms like Axios to get us up to speed. So let me tell you what I did today on Axios. Boom. Found out that the consumer trusts themselves more about healthcare and what's in their best interest than they do healthcare providers.
Right.
What does that news tell us? And that, by the way, that was an exclusive. Good job. Why is that important as it relates to personalization outbreak? Here's why. Because today we're supposed to have a personalized healthcare system that knows who we are as individuals so they can treat us, do the proper clinical trials, have the right pharma products, have the right treatments and cures, but they don't know us enough. So what do we do with that? Complain? Or do we get out in front of that before circumstances force their hand? So this is a simple example of what you just told us. How'd I do there?
Good. And I would take it a step further. This is another area that you can control. And that, by the way, there's more opportunity than ever before. You should learn about your health. Go just listen to Dr. Peter Attia, who I think is really, really smart on this, science-based, highly educated, really good at breaking down the different dimensions of health. If not him, there's literally hundreds of doctors on the internet for free that you can listen to so you can start to think about your health and not just trust. The consumer's right. You shouldn't just trust the professional. My wife's gone through all kinds of health hell, and we've gone to the best hospitals in the world, and I'm shocked at how little some of these doctors actually know and how little they pay attention to her personal situation. So that means she and I have to educate ourselves and take the power back. And the good news is there's more tools than ever before. Just like there's more ways to find a job than ever before, there's more tools available for free to you on your phone or this computer than at any point in humanity, with higher quality information from a more diverse set of voices.
I'm going to wrap it up with one more question, but I want to just take a moment to pause here. This was a real life example, watchers and listeners. What are you excited about? Go look it up on Axios or your favorite platform, but I'm a fan of Axios. What does the article say? Does it bring you down or does it lift you up? Regardless, there are opportunities if you're hungry to learn and grow. So thanks for riffing with me on that one, because that was fabulous. So, Jim, we know it's a political year, a big one. And I'm not going to get into the details about it, but I would love to get just a broad sense of your vision. What are your concerns about today's political discourse, and where do you see it going in the next 3, 4, who knows, maybe 12 months?
We could spend a whole show on this. Like, the thing that worries me is that because of social media, because of the way that we consume political information, you would walk away thinking that everyone hates each other and that we're deeply divided. When in fact, I don't believe that that's the truth. I actually think 70 to 80% of people are quite sane. They're too busy, you know, going to Little League or taking care of a parent or going to church to get that hopped up about politics. And that we've lost sight that beyond whatever the debate of the day is, you live in a country, and I assume most of your listeners are here in the U.S., you live in a country with some decisive, beautiful, wonderful advantages that you should stop taking for granted, man. Like, capitalism's awesome. Freedom is awesome. Two big oceans on our shoulders protecting us is awesome. The amount of natural resources, natural energy, clean energy, traditional energy that are produced here compared to other nations, the growth that we see as a country, the fact that AI was created not by the Chinese, the Iranians, the Russians, it was created by Americans, and we're like a year ahead of everybody else. Why? Because there's just something about this place that a schmuck like me could go from delivering pizzas to starting two companies to being on this podcast talking about my book. And like that is what I worry will get lost in this election.
Jim, any final thoughts on your book? Like I said, I've already pre-ordered it. Yeah. I'm excited to go deep into it. But give us a little bit about why this book would be why would this book be so impactful to someone's life right now?
Yeah, I think it again, I'm biased. I wrote it, but it's called Just the Good Stuff. And it's literally all of the things that I learned either by screwing it up and learning how to do it right or watching other people who are exponentially better than me. And I take those notes and I basically share them. There's probably 60 to 70 very, very activating ideas where, like, you read a chapter, no chapter will take you more than 2 minutes. Everything has three or four takeaways where you can apply it to your life. And the cool thing I think about the book is it's really handy if you're a college graduate about to go into the workforce and thinking about how to navigate this world. There's a whole section on how to be a better manager. There's a section on how to be a good leader. I think if you're Jamie Dimon and you're running JP Morgan Chase, there's stuff for you. And if you're the 18-year-old version of Jim Vandehei in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, there's a ton of it in there for you. And it's been all the money, all the proceeds go to a foundation we set up to help people in need get through college or get vocational help. So, like, I don't even profit from it, but like, I'm excited because it really is like I'm the vessel of the wisdom of a whole lot of people who are smarter than I am.
Jim, you have shared a lot of wisdom with us today, and it's just been a pleasure to get to know you.
I love your questions.
Matt, you're a really good guy, and I really appreciate it. I know our audience does, and keep doing great things, and love to stay in touch. Thank you so much,
you too.
Jim.
I appreciate it. Take care.
As we leave every show, when you lead in the age of personalization, you will see things that others don't. Do what others won't, and keep pushing when prudence says quit. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Personalization Outbreak. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. If you enjoyed the content, visit ageofpersonalization.com to check out our free streaming video series and learn how to get involved in the movement. I'm Glenn Yopis. I wish you a good day. And remember, without strategy, change is merely substitution, not evolution.